flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest 100% organic cotton sheets from Boll & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with sheets that feel breathable to sleep in. You'll experience the purest softness on night one and feel your sheets get even softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first set of sheets at bollandbranch.com with code Odyssey. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Okay, business leaders, are you playing defense or are you on the offense? Are you just, excuse me, hey, I'm trying to talk business here. As I was saying, are you here just to play or are you playing to win? If you're in it to win, meet your next MVP, NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is your full business management system in one suite. With NetSuite, you're running your accounting, your financials, HR, e-commerce, and more, all from your online dashboard. One source of truth means every department's working from the same numbers with no data delays. And with AI embedded throughout, you're automating manual tasks, plus getting fast insights for your next move. Whether you're competing on your home turf or looking to conquer international markets, NetSuite helps you get the W. Over 40,000 businesses have already made the move to NetSuite, the number one cloud ERP.
Right now, get the CFO's Guide to AI and Machine Learning at netsuite.com/special. Get this free guide at netsuite.com/special.
Okay, guys.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so this time last year, this is relevant because the Texans are looking for an offensive coordinator right now. Something that this time a year ago, I don't think we would have imagined that this is where they would be based on how year one went. Nothing, you know, nothing's perfect. There was obviously always a chance, but I think the hope was that the Texans would be ascending offensively, that Bobby Slowick would be getting just as many looks at head coaching jobs this year as he was last year when he had, I think, five or six interviews for head coaching jobs. So he came back here this time a year ago. Everybody celebrated. He got a big raise, reportedly. And C.J. Stroud was going to have his offensive coordinator again. Gerard Johnson interviewed for a bunch of OC jobs. He came back for another year. The O-line was going to be healthy again. It wasn't very healthy in 2023, but you'd have virtually all your guys back there. Dalton Schultz was brought back on a three-year deal. So the big theme last year, Seth, I remember talking about it, was all this continuity that there was going to be from year one to year two.
Yeah, I guess there was continuity, but I don't know. I mean, there was the interior offensive line was still a question. I think I was optimistic that Shaq Mason maybe had been banged up or just there were reasons that he wasn't quite the same guy he'd been previously in his career. Kenyon Green was going to be a huge question mark, and I was trying to put my faith in, you know, Casario and everybody else's opinion of him, that they seem to be very bullish on him. Mm-hmm. Remember, he had his reinvented physique. He did look a lot better in the non-padded portions of training camp.
Slender,
I remember when he was running around in no pads, I was like, wow, look at that. He does look different.
Who is that?
And then all of a sudden, the Texans' defensive line looked like they had four all-pros. That was the X factor there, but I don't think you would have expected the offensive line to take a step back necessarily.
No.
That was at the very least, all right, the pass protection might be okay, and they won't take a step back. At least they'll get better. We don't know how good they'll be.
Yeah, there was. It almost felt like there was no area of the offense that you were doing one of two things. You were either bringing guys back who could have left in some fashion, or you were upgrading positions, like bringing in Stephon Diggs or bringing in Joe Mixon. Like, it felt like they had set themselves up to where intuitively the odds of going backwards would be very, very low, you know?
Right, of going backwards. The question was, can they progress? The biggest question was, all right, can Bobby Slowick engineer a run game? And he failed, even with Joe Mixon coming in, I would have thought, well, all right, they'll probably be better just because Joe Mixon is there, but they won't be worse.
Yeah.
But in terms of success rate, they were atrocious running the football. And if it weren't for Joe Mixon, it would have been twice as bad this year. Yeah, I didn't expect everything to be as bad as it was in the second half of the season, especially.
Yeah, your points on the O-line. I think of the three things I just listed, O-line, Slowick, I'll throw Gerard Johnson in there, so call it coaching, and Schultz.
Yeah.
The O-line, I think, was the one that was probably the most rickety when it came to continuity being a thing, just because there were still so many moving parts and guys coming back from injury. Your point on Slowick is great, that like they weren't actually good at certain things in 2023 even.
Yeah, and I kept people got angry at me some last year because I would point out that, you know, they weren't a genuinely good offense. They were a promising offense, but I felt that's why I got nervous about people talking about having 3 1,000-yard receivers and all of that, because they still had to prove that they were a genuinely good offense, and a big part of that was just having a competent, dependable run game. And but yeah, I didn't expect them to fall so short of it.
Schultz is absolutely something that I think, or someone that was brought back, where continuity and chemistry with C.J. Stroud was the main selling point for him.
Yeah,
I mean, because in retrospect, it's an overpay for Dalton Schultz right now. 3 years, 36.
Sure. I mean, yeah. I think Dalton Schultz is what Cowboys fans said he was. That's the most annoying part of all of this, is that the Cowboys might made the right move in going to their young stud there over Dalton Schultz. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't have expected Dalton Schultz to... It's not like I expect him to be a good blocker all of a sudden, but he looked like he was a willing blocker. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the season, it looked like that was the last thing he wanted to do was block. And he was so bad at it.
Yeah.
That part is disappointing, because I felt like, all right, well, he is what he is. And he ends up with basically the same receiving numbers this year as last. 100 yards fewer receptions, but 53 receptions this year, 59 receptions last year. That was a big, especially after having paid him what you did, that was a big disappointment.
The big thing, if I recall, and it sounds like you got the numbers in front of you there, but what I recall from his first year is he was a much more reliable red zone target. Anyway,
like he had 2 touchdowns this year compared to 5 in 2023.
Okay, so I mean, it's not like he was Travis Kelce or anything, but he 2.5 times the touchdowns, I guess, yeah.
I'll tell you what the eyeball would tell you, though, too, was that in 2023, I think we saw him bulldoze people at the first down markers and at the goal line. Whereas this year, it almost felt like he was kind of leaning into maybe getting a first down sometimes. It just looked like he lost power. Maybe ultimately there were injury issues above and beyond your standard stuff. That would be the silver lining, as if, okay, it was a rough year, but there was a reason for it. But he just didn't seem as physical a player.
Yeah, he's not going anywhere. You know, anytime you and I bring up the offensive line or Schultz or, you know, any other number of players who disappointed. And there aren't that many, to be fair. Like the Texans, you know, they on defense, I can't think of one where people are like, get rid of this guy. But on offense, there are a handful. I don't think Schultz is going anywhere. Like, I think he maybe like C.J. Stroud is this offseason. If he feels like it, maybe he needs to do some soul searching a little
bit. He is a good weapon in the receiving game, and he can be adequate enough as a blocker if you've got somebody else that's actually a primo stud.
Yeah.
And right now, whether it's a draft pick or maybe if Cade Stover continues to develop, I have to keep reminding myself that Brevin Jordan is coming back.
Yeah.
So at least you've got some diversity there. Just by having multiple guys who are threats on offense, that helps each one of. There's a synergistic effect there. If you've got multiple tight ends that teams have to game plan for, then you can see a better version of him, perhaps. It just certainly wasn't it this year.
No. Here was C.J. Stroud a year ago talking about Gerard Johnson, Texans quarterback coach.
Yeah, Gerard, I've known Gerard since I was 16. I was in the Elite 11 with him. He was my quarterback coach there. And one thing, man, I can say about Gerard, man, is like when you talk about someone who knows how to play the position of quarterback and knows how to relay something, but also just a great person, man, a guy who loves football. He loves Houston. He loves Texas. He loves his family. He's a great family man, and somebody who's taught me just a tremendous amount of information. But on top of that, man, put a lot of confidence into me as well. Like when I was 16 at Elite 11, we did like this little like circle group. It was like all the quarterbacks in my group. And Gerard's one thing for me was like, be confident. Cause he, at that time, like I wasn't really the highest recruit. I wasn't who I will become, you know what I'm saying? And I always knew that it would be a possibility, but I didn't hear it out. Like those type of, the Gerard's one I looked up to, like he played at Texas A&M, I knew that. And stuff like that. And when he was like, man, you need to be more confident. Like, and it was just like, it changed my life, you know what I'm saying? And from there, like, fast forward, I'm here with him my rookie year. It's been just a blessing to work with him. And I'm, whatever happens, man, I'm excited for him. And he deserves everything that's coming for him. And I'm super blessed to be able to work with him.
Yeah, I guess I think all those things can be true. And yet at the same time, the dynamic that concerns me most about a candidate like Gerard is that I think he's got a very promising future, and yet he's never been a play caller in college or the NFL. And being an offensive coordinator is way more than about just the quarterback position or even calling plays. It's that you've got to be coaching the offensive line, you've got to be coaching the wide receivers. And I think that his best spot right now is either as an offensive coordinator for a team that has an offensive-minded head coach or has a defensive coach that's got lots of time and experience. But I don't... We've just seen a promising and bright young offensive coordinator go through an extreme learning curve, and I don't want my offensive coordinator to be going through a learning curve in year one. I need somebody that can has run the whole show before and can not just be an influence on the quarterback, but be an influence on everybody. Now maybe Draw Johnson ends up being that guy. You never know, because there's all kinds of great future offensive coordinators out there that are going to get their first job at some point. The Texans right now just don't feel like that team. It feels like it made sense with Bobby Slowick if you looked at it as, all right, well, this is going to be a rebuild and it might take a few years. And then all of a sudden they're contenders after year one. Mm-hmm. And man, I ain't got no time for Bobby Slowick's learning curve. And right, I don't feel like I want to be a part of any first-time offensive coordinator's learning curves right now with where the team is.
If you were the OC that they picked and you were sitting down with Gerard Johnson talking about, forget about OC, talk about bringing him back as a quarterback's coach, how much would that relationship that we just heard CJ talking about factor into his evaluation for you?
Oh, well, bring him back for, yeah, it'd for be QB great. Coach. Yeah, that'd be awesome if they want to bring him back as the quarterback's coach.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got no opposition to that. There's zero. So if anybody misunderstood that, it's not like I want Gerard Johnson out of the building.
No. I'm just wondering, like, would it be a huge factor for you that he's got the relationship with C.J. Stroud as opposed to other candidates to be the QB? I mean, the position.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if the guy's just adamantly, especially if C.J. Stroud is saying it or something, then, yeah.
Because you pointed out before, like, Gerard Johnson and Bill Lazor are the ones that spend the most time with C.J. of all these guys. You know, like, that's what I'm trying to make the distinction between the QB coach and the OC. Payne and Pendergast.
That's the biggest thing if you think about it. It's not just the play calling. It's that you're coaching the entire offense.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal. I think Bobby Slowick was a passing game coordinator in San Francisco, and we were just wondering, all right, is he going to show any competence at all in the run game? And those guys looked completely lost for answers and handling simple things like a slanting defensive tackle.
Yep.
They had no answers for something that every team in the NFL does, and that was frustrating. And was it Chris Trouser's fault? Was it Bobby Slowick's fault? Who knows? We're not in the room every day, but they did. That combo certainly wasn't getting it done.
No. Someone says on the text page, don't forget the Texans had George Fant last year, much better run blocker than Tunsil or Titus Howard. Is that accurate? Was Fant a better run blocker last year? I don't remember.
Than Titus Howard or who? Than Tunsil?
Or Tunsil. Oh,
yeah, but the problem with the run blocking wasn't the offensive tackles. It was the interior offensive line. So, no, I mean, maybe, sure, George Fant might have made a difference.
Yeah.
But it's not that's it, – and it was – look, it wasn't just the actual physical play. It was the way that they were picking up blitzes and stunts in games in both the run and pass game that they just looked completely lost. There was just no cohesion whatsoever. And even some of the, like, some of the rules, when I would just send stuff out to some of my O-line people, some of the rules for how you handle slants and stunts by the defensive linemen, guys were having a really hard time figuring out exactly how the Texans were trying to handle it. It was a discombobulated mess.
Yep. CJ Stroud will not be going to the Pro Bowl, according to DJ Bienemae. He was offered the opportunity to, but DJ frames it as DJ thinks this is the beginning of CJ's offseason of putting his head down and going to work.
Yeah, sorry, I'm still stuck on the George Fant thing. Like, I'm like, George Fant was there with Laremy Tunsil as well.
Yeah.
So I don't. All right, George Fant's a better run blocker than Laremy Tunsil, but he played. Laremy Tunsil was on both these teams. All right.
My favorite part about the George Fant text is that it starts with "Don't forget."
Yeah.
I like "Don't forget."
No, yeah. Now I do. There is something to be said for the fact that hey, George Fant being there as a swing tackle was a big bonus when they had all those injuries and Titus had to move down to guard. Yes, I would. If on the sum total of things, would I have rather had Blake Fisher or George Fant in the playoff game? I would have rather had George Fant.
Right. Yeah. But I don't think, like, it's not like this time a year ago, we're like, you got to hold on to George Fant or else the whole castle is going to come crumbling down.
I was nervous about the prospect of a rookie playing. It was nice to have George Fant.
Yeah.
It was really nice to have George Fant. But ultimately, you got to hope that you can draft guys that can play that role.
Yep. So no CJ in the Pro Bowl this year. So you won't be getting your, not you, Seth, the audience. You won't be getting your Twitter moments where he's throwing, running away from his arm, dropping it in the bucket to Jamar Chase.
Yeah.
For a touchdown. So
yeah. So DJ Bienname, when he tweeted this out, said that how did he frame it?
He said he thinks it's the beginning of CJ's offseason of putting his head down and going to work.
Yeah. So there you go. Or at the very least, healing up completely.
Yeah.
Whatever CJ's injuries were at the end of the season, it seemed like if they had been affecting his accuracy, it seemed by the time the playoffs rolled around that he must have been feeling better because he looked a lot more like the old precise CJ Stroud. But even though you don't do much at the Pro Bowl these days, and the only thing that's close to football is the 7-on-7, I could see him probably feeling like, no, I need it, like. He doesn't need to be in the phase right now where he's got his head down and working, but he might need to be recuperating.
Yeah.
And that a week in Orlando, you know, not to mention who knows how many water slides he'd go on and subject himself to harm. How long would he stand in the line to get on the log ride, you know?
I'm genuinely curious how visible he is this offseason compared to last season where he was everywhere for, you know, he was in, where was he, in Japan or China? He was in...
Japan. Well, they did an Asian tour. I think they went to more than just Japan.
Yeah, I think they did.
I think they might have been in China also.
They were definitely in Japan. They did some sumo wrestling there, so that would speak to Japan. But did it, like, didn't, I mean, he's going to vacation, he's going to go places, but he was doing stuff with Micah Parsons where clearly the big purpose of it was to generate content and, you know,
right,
draw
attention.
Right,
it was all part of publicity stuff for whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just curious how much of that we think he does.
I think we probably, you know what, speaking of keeping a low profile, I wonder if another name that starts to surface at all is Byron Leftwich. Because Byron Leftwich, after he left Tampa, I guess he took a year off to basically travel with his son, who's a basketball player, to AAU tournaments and everything.
Oh, cool.
And at some point, he's expressed a desire to get back into coaching.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't, you know, he might be a victim of having been Tom Brady's offensive coordinator, working underneath Bruce Arians. Because people are going to wonder, all right, how much, you know, how much was that really you and all that? But I don't know. I haven't seen his name in any interviews or anything like that.
I've seen his name. I haven't seen him in any with the Texans. And maybe I've seen his name on like lists that people put together.
Yeah.
Like I've not, to your point, I haven't seen any team put out a graphic yet where they're like, we just completed our interview with Byron Leftwich.
The Patriots interviewed Byron Leftwich.
Did they? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's the only one I've seen is that a few weeks ago the Patriots interviewed Byron Leftwich. Oh, that was for head coach.
For head coach. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And they hired Mike Vrabel. Okay.
That's right, yeah, because I don't think McDaniels was even interviewed. I think Vrabel just
plucked him.
Pulled him in, yeah. Yep. I don't think they went through interviews.
Yep. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. Okay, up next, there's three teams right now on the odds board that are basically even for Alex Bregman. We'll let you know who they are the Astros in the mix, and there's also rumors out there as to what exactly Bregman is looking for. We will get to that coming up next.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, so the looking at an article in the Chronicle and talking about the Astros. The Astros were waiting on Alex Bregman, and I saw Michael Schwab tweeted a little bit earlier. Michael knows some people. Said that the rumor is that Alex Bregman is waiting on a $30 million a year offer. The Astros are sitting at 26. I don't need the Astros to spice up their offer for Alex Bregman. They are clearly in the market. Like they are firmly, they may be above market right now based on what, at least outwardly, Bregman's market appears to be.
Yeah.
So the website bookies.com, it's an odds maker, updated the hypothetical odds of where Bregman will land, and the Astros right now are almost even with the Cubs and the Tigers. Cubs are 3-1 to sign Bregman. Tigers are 3.5-1. The Astros are plus 375, which is 3.75-1. So they're, according to one odds maker, they are firmly in the mix with the Tigers and the Cubs.
Yeah.
So
what do we do with that?
Cubs are making big moves. Well, the Cubs have become like a home for wayward Astros lately with Tucker and Ryan Presley. The Tigers obviously have A.J. Hinch there. And to me, the bigger thing is what's Alex Bregman looking for? And I think it's interesting, you know, Schwab's tweet there that he's looking for $30 million. I'm going to guess I know the answer to this already, but would you like the Astros to move off of their current offer for Alex Bregman, Seth?
Yeah, I know. No. There's no way in hell they'll move off their current offer.
The only movement that you have been a proponent for is reducing the amount of money you give Alex Bregman
reducing the years.
The years.
Right, yeah, reduce the total money, maybe keep it at the same average per year,
yeah,
but reduce the number of years, whatever it might be, because the organization specifically made moves planning on Alex Bregman not being there.
Yeah.
And they made him his offer. He left. He just sat out there forever, very clear, didn't want to come back to Houston because, man, there's big money out there,
yeah,
and I got to go prospecting for it. And now all of a sudden he wants to come back and live on the ranch after he forsook the ranch. No. This ranch is going to the second oldest child.
Dana Brown has said that the door is cracked for Alex Bregman. I wonder if they've got a drop dead date, because look, it's going to be February this weekend, which means we're 2 weeks away from pitchers and catchers, which means
news to me.
Spring training is going to be here pretty soon. I wonder if there's a drop-dead date for Dana Brown and the Astros where they say 6 years, 156, take it or leave it. You know, this is it. Because you can't sit in limbo like this. You know, obviously, at the very least, by the time guys are showing up at spring training, you have to have made a move. I don't know. Maybe Jose Altuve's cool with moving to left field in the middle of spring training. I have no idea.
That'll be the big fun thing to watch. Mm-hmm. That'd be the first indicator that, hey, maybe this thing is really happening. If out there at spring training, Jose Altuve's, you know, not just during batting practice or anything, he's out there getting reps at left field.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. That would be pretty cool in that, it would be fun to talk about. I'm not a huge fan of it, but it would be cool to talk about it.
It'd be cool in the Sean Pendergast realm, like, oh, this would be amazing for radio. Jose Altuve playing left field. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how amazing he would be out there. But Yeah, I think they got to figure this thing out at some point and move on.
You know who I'm mad at more than anything? Scott freaking Boris.
Yeah.
Scott Boris, who Bregman fired his previous agent to hire Scott Boris. And I'm guessing that Scott Boris told Alex Bregman, whatever. Yeah, you'll do way better than what the Astros are offering. You got to get out there and take what's yours. And he gets out there, and Bregman's like, well, I just...
I
would have liked to stay there.
You got the
chance. Now, ultimately, Bregman... Look, Boris works for Bregman, so I don't exonerate Bregman from anything. But I would note that, man, if Boris was telling Bregman, like, oh, yeah... Oh, there's gold in them there hills.
Yeah.
Or in Chicago. You got to get out there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. So it's text messages are coming in on this. Honestly, I'm getting tired of Alex Bregman crap, except they got a little more graphic with the language there. And I don't know if this means that particular texter is tired of us talking about it or if they're just tired of Bregman's act, I'll call it. Follow-up text. Yes, I'm in agreement with Seth. We've signed people since he's been D-ing around. I would offer him 4 years, $75 million. Take it or leave it. LOL.
Take it, punk.
Can you imagine? I'm looking for 30. Here's less than 20.
Okay. Now here's the other thing. Mm-hmm. Now this guy's in a different category than Bregman, obviously.
Yeah.
But I was trying to think of is Bryce Harper the guy who signed a big contract the latest into free agency?
That's a good question.
His was in February.
Yep.
His was, it was February, boy, this February 28th was when it was announced.
Yeah.
Or at least when the story was. So, I mean, it was into spring training. It was still technically free agency, but well outside the normal window of free agency. So, I suppose it could be, there could be that dynamic that maybe the money is out there, but for various reasons that it's just not going to happen until...
Yeah.
February, the last day of February in 2019.
In 2019, that was my question. So that was pre-COVID.
But that was also back when that was in that couple of years where free agency got super
really
weird.
Really slow for everybody. You know, for all the stars. And so with that in mind, that's a great point. So that may have had, like, Bryce Harper may have had as much to do with the overall market than anything else, because I would say respectfully to Alex Bregman, you ain't Bryce Harper. You know, like,
right, yeah. And but again, Dallas Keuchel's the other guy that springs to mind is a guy that did not get nearly the attention in free agency that he thought he was going to get. He ended up signing in like July that
year. Yeah,
and it wasn't a short-term deal. Yeah, for nearly what I think he was probably expecting or hoping to get.
Yeah,
he was a little bit of a victim of the way they changed the strike zone, and it kind of took away his superpower.
Saw Tuve was taking fly balls in left. It looks weird. I'm over the Breggy BS. Yeah, a lot of people are kind of... This whole saga is fatiguing people of Alex Bregman now. You know what I mean? I think they
feel... It's almost like a player that... Well, it's not nearly on the level of Lance McCullers yet, because this has been 3 years now where Lance has been so injured all the time.
Yeah.
But people who genuinely appreciate Lance's efforts in the World Series victories and whatnot, it's all the time, and it just keeps going on, and that's what it's starting to feel. It just keeps dragging out with Bregman.
It's an interesting comparison because, look, Lance McCullers, if we're talking about reasons to be mad at people or reasons to be upset, nobody held a gun to Lance's head, or to Jim Crane's head, I should say, to offer Lance McCullers the $17 million a year that he's getting right now to largely rehab injuries. Like, they offered it to Lance, he took the deal, and he's been injured. Lance McCullers, if anything, Lance McCullers has been, I won't say the polar opposite, because I don't want to paint Bregman out like he hates Houston or something like that.
Right.
But Lance McCullers has worn Houston on his sleeve from about the time he was called up to the majors. And Bregman has too. Bregman really likes Houston. He's done a lot of great things for Houston. But I think you could construe the way things are going right now is, well, he's obviously not 100% in on Houston. Houston's given him a great offer, and he's still waiting around for more money, it would appear. You know, Bregman hasn't spoken, nor really has Boris very much at all about this. We're just trying to read all the tea leaves and go to the people that are kind of, you know, culling all the rumors together.
I guess the other part with McCullers too was that was... You know, he understood his injury history and what it meant. So the Astros gave him a deal that, they were accounting for his injury history, but for his upside, and McCullers knew that that was probably his best chance to get good, really respectable long-term money.
Yeah.
So, I you know, I feel bad for his Paredes. I feel like that Dana Brown goes up there at the Fan Fest and basically he said at least a couple times, oh, I mean, if Bregman did come back, even though it's a long shot, oh yeah, he's your third baseman. Yeah. He's awesome. He's incredible. Which, yes, it's true, but you don't have to say it quite like that.
We just
we're trying to get Paredes comfortable here. Just, you know, be one of us.
We just started dating like 3 weeks ago. I thought we had a thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And be like, I mean, yeah, really. And then all of a sudden, you start talking about your ex-wife. And you're like, oh, you know, I really wish we could have rekindled it. I mean, it's long shot that it'll ever happen, but you know. What are you ordering? Lobster? Great.
Always the most expensive thing on the menu. Okay. Yeah, well, then but then they try to like cool off Paredes by going, no, dude, man, it's cool. You can always move over to first base. And Christian Walker's like, hey, I thought we were dating too.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
It's like all of a sudden those guys married into a polyamorous relationship without even realizing it. And it's just like they're in big love. And like all of a sudden, like, hey, by the way, honey, there's going to be more of you.
And the solution is to take the one out of all of them who's been most devoted to you the whole time and make her live in the outhouse.
Yeah.
Jose Altuve. No, we'll accommodate all you newbies here. Jose, you can go live in left field. How's that sound? And Jose's too nice. He's like, I'll do anything. I'll do anything to make Bregy come back to the building. Anything. I would do anything for love, to quote the great Meatloaf.
You think you could pull off a polyamorous? Could you pull off multiple wives?
I can barely pull off one. No. God, no, that's way too much. No. Do you?
I don't know how that was ever something that people aspired to.
Oh,
I really,
my God.
I just, you look at various, I just, I don't know, man. I don't understand why that was ever a thing. I mean, I get it. There were reasons for it. But like, it just, but still,
no.
Of all the things that I could accumulate as a status symbol, that would be the last one I would ever want.
And let me be very clear, because my wife listens to the show. The reason I'm saying, oh, God, no, has nothing to do with her. It all has to do with me. My wife is as low maintenance as it gets. Like, she's amazing. But, like, no, that's a lot of work, man.
Well, you know what, though? The difference is, I guess if you're thinking about it purely from a male perspective.
Yeah.
Okay, ladies, I understand how, like, so this is from a pure male perspective. If you're somebody who's pious and you're not going to have sex outside of marriage, that you also, but then you get, but you're allowed to have multiple wives.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
I mean, that's at least one of the selling points. But we think of it through our eyes and our lens, which is like, all right, if you're like, why have multiple wives if you're just going to be a dirty dog?
Yeah.
Just go out and do elsewhere. Where they weren't necessarily thinking about that in the, you know, in
the other wives would have to be
societies that do
the
it.
Other wives would have to be really cool for there not to be, you know, carnal involved.
There's,
you know,
a lot of
for sure.
But in a lot of those cultures, they don't necessarily have much say in the matter. That's
no.
what I'm saying. This is a purely
that's in the world of Sean, in the religion of Sean T. Pendergast, if there was, you know, such a thing. But no, I couldn't do that at all.
So there you go, Payne and Pendergast for polygamy.
Yes.
Staunch polygamist.
Do your thing. No, I do. If you want to do it, do it. I'm monogamy is already that's enough on my plate. Boy, people are upset with Bregman, Seth. I love Bregman, but I think I'd rather spend the money on other pieces at this point. And that's the most gentle.
He's a polygamist. You can't support him.
You can't. No. F. Bregman, we don't need him back. He's a detriment to the team in the beginning of the season because of his notoriously slow starts. He's declining.
Yeah. I know. That's another part. You know what? No. That's a good part of it. Is that he's like, he goes through these long droughts.
Yeah.
And okay, great. He's having competitive at bats and all, but in any era of baseball, including analytics, I don't want my guy having a 188 batting average out there for months at a time.
No.
Okay.
No.
So that's where I think Bregman has a shorter leash than others, in that, all right, why is it always something with Bregman?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, if it's not a long drought offensively, it's him leaving the Astros twisting in the wind and maybe teasing us a little bit with potentially coming back several months into free agency.
Yep, that's exactly what it is.
All right, good. Yeah, the hate is building.
Slow starter.
That's right. That's That's right, Brandy. That's how Brandy keeps away from having to have sister wives, by having good drops.
Good drops. Good impersonations of Seth.
I'll bring another woman in here to give us drops for the radio show, okay?
Yeah, no, that'd be good. It's good for content. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Final segment coming up. Rockets had a big win last night. I'm looking at a story right now of something that others have tried to involve the Rockets in. Don't do it, Rockets. That is next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Now 4.3 to go. Thompson on Brown, into the lane, got the shot off! 0.7 to go. Thompson gives the Rockets the lead!
Are you kidding me?
Richard! Oh, the Rockets win the game!
All right, so just in case, for those of you that didn't see the end of the Rocket game last night, it sounded like a buzzer beater, right? With Amen Thompson, and there was 0.7 seconds left. It just felt like there was still another shot that needed to be taken by the Celtics. It was a three-quarter court shot that landed in the fifth row, so not a real threat. But the Rockets win last night, 114-112. I'm looking at the standings in the Western Conference. I'm trying to come up with right now, Seth, just looking, because the Rockets are for real. Like, they're beating good teams. With the Texans during the season, we knew that there were good things about the Texans. They weren't a bad team. They were a good team, but they played a lot of close games. Their point differential was very slim. You know, among the teams that were in that 10 or 11 win category, they had the lowest point differential, and they didn't beat a lot of good teams during the year. The Rockets are the opposite of that. The Rockets are beating good teams, and they've got a decent point differential. They're second in the Western Conference right now. And all the teams that are around them in the standings, they've beaten at least once or twice this season. They've beaten Oklahoma City once. They've beaten Memphis a couple times recently. They beat Denver recently, albeit without Jokic. They've beaten the Lakers. The Clippers they've beaten a couple times. Minnesota. So they've – this is not – they're not lamb killers at all. Like, they're 31-14. And we're getting to the point now where these teams have all started to play 45 to 50 games. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm looking at they're 3.5 games ahead of Denver, the four seed. My floor for this team right now, assuming health, relative health, is that my floor is that they have a home court advantage in the first round of the playoffs. That they're one, yeah. They're somewhere 1-4 in the seeding right now.
No, I think they can definitely sustain this.
Yeah.
And with Jabari Smith Jr. coming back to round out the regular season, and the fact that they play tenacious defense very, very regularly. You don't expect hiccups in that. You know, shooting comes and goes. The defense, and they've had some defensive letdowns, some notable ones at times. That's going to happen, but it's more consistently available every single night. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. This is not a team, hey, you don't have to worry about them going dry from the three-point line, because that's their status quo.
Yeah.
So it's more about the defense and the offensive rebounding that is going to sustain them. And I'd be really, really surprised if there's a huge drop-off or a huge dip somehow.
The Miami Heat have taken decisive action by suspending Jimmy Butler indefinitely after he walked out of a team shoot-around. The move has led to a significant recalibration of the Heat's trade strategy, with the team now lowering their asking price for Jimmy Butler. I don't want Jimmy Butler at any asking price on the Rockets.
No,
I
think this is a team that's playing above the depth chart and how it looks on paper, partly because of chemistry and because of the right mix of veterans and young players. And I don't think this is not the scenario that makes me feel like, oh yeah, this is what you have to do. You need to do it with this. Plus, the notion of trading away either active players or draft picks for the future, which can be used for, you know, trade pieces elsewhere, I'd rather that be more precision and less of a grasp at something this year than to go after Jimmy Butler, who's a very, very notable malcontent.
Yeah, this is as malcontent as it gets. Walking out of the shoot around, he missed a flight last week. You know, like, it's bad. It's really, really bad. They mentioned the Grizzlies and the Bucks as teams that might be in the mix. I guess there was a trade with the Suns that they might have been able to do, but there were complications with Bradley Beal's contract to make that happen. But I don't want the Rockets anywhere near Jimmy Butler right now.
I was just looking at the offensive rebounding stats, and it is, I've just kind of like, they've been leading the offensive rebounding for most, right, but they're very, very good at it. They've been leading it for, but it's by such a big margin, too. Mm-hmm. The Grizzlies are second in offensive rebounding at 13.1 per game. Mm-hmm. The Rockets are at 14.7.
Nice.
That's a lot over there. That's a damn near two, it's 1.5 to 2 extra per game. Yeah. That adds up over time.
Now, some would say they've got more misses to actually
That's
rebound
a good point.
On the offensive end.
But the Rockets, they're like Dennis Rodman, and they know where exactly where their missed shots are going to go.
But I would say, yeah, I like that. But it matches the eye test. Like, they are relentless on the offensive glass. Like, they're always getting a hand on the ball. So no, I'm with you on that. You were reading a Greg Olson piece to me during the break. What's Greg Olson?
He sat down with somebody. It was like a sit down with Bryce Young or something. What was this? Sorry, I found it on The Spun. But he was doing an interview, and somebody was asking him about it was at The Athletic. Asked him about, like, is it tough watching, Tom Brady sit there and do those games that you would have been doing?
What did he say?
He said a couple really diplomatic things. And then he said, yeah, it's hard to sit there and watch games that over the last couple of years you were preparing for and you were calling. And then you're sitting there on your couch and you're watching the game. You're almost kind of broadcasting the game in your brain. You're saying, oh, man, what would I have said on this play? There was so much to talk about there. That would have been super fun to dive into. That sounds like veiled criticism at what Tom Brady chose to
talk
about. No, I'm joking. I don't think it sounds snarky at all. It makes sense. That's what he would.
No, I thought to be clear, I thought Brady did a good job in the NFC title game. I haven't gotten to watch much of him this year because you and I are busy on Sundays. But the parts that I had seen up to this past Sunday, I wasn't totally enamored with. Understanding it's the first year he's done it, he's just getting paid a lot of money, and he's Tom Brady, so we expect him to be good at everything right out of the chute. I thought he was really good in the NFC title game. Well, that kind of sucks for Greg Olson, man. Like that it actually makes it hard to watch football games. You know what I mean? Like, this just in, that's a big part of his job is watching football games.
This is the other quote. I don't think resentment's probably accurate, but I also think it's not too far off, if I'm being honest. I'm not resentful, but it's close.
I wonder what his contract's like. Like, I wonder if he has a clause, like, as part of the negotiation, knowing he was going to be getting moved down to the B team.
Yeah.
If he had any leverage to say, look, if I get offered a number one chair with Amazon, NBC, CBS, Netflix.
Any of these other ones that are doing games.
Any of these other outlets, if he had a clause in there, like Lou Holtz had a clause in his contract with the University of Minnesota back in the day, that he could leave with no buyout if Notre Dame offered him the job. I wonder if he's got like a favored nation kind of thing like that. Like, hey, who would you like them to replace?
I'd say to Greg Olson?
What?
Like, I don't know, man. Maybe you should have played quarterback and been a good quarterback.
And win six Super Bowls.
Yeah, you're an awesome tight end, but maybe you should have been a better tight end.
Yeah, okay?
That's the sum total of what it is. That's what I would say to him.
That's what you would say.
You know? What are you going to do? Well, it's the same. It's like, if you get caught up, and I don't think Olson's the kind of guy to get caught up in that resentment or being jealous or whatever. I mean, that's the reality of the situation is, yeah, that big name helps you a lot when you get into broadcasting, and nobody's got a bigger name than Tom Brady.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole. I always tell people in sports broadcasting, because sometimes some young sports media people will get upset about athletes getting these jobs when I put in so much work. I'm like, listen, they're two separate jobs.
Yeah,
there's the former athletes in media that listeners or the audience member likes to they like them for their experiences and everything else, and then there's like the actual media professionals.
Right,
those are who you're competing with.
Yeah,
so like, don't sit there whining and complaining about these guys that get this opportunity because they're football players when there are other guys who are just like you that went to broadcasting school and everything who are doing better than you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those are your competitors,
yeah,
and they're outperforming you.
Yep.
So why are you wasting your time whining about this? So likewise, I think Greg Olson knows, like, he knows the deal, that there's a certain element there that it doesn't matter whether it's fair or not. It's people respond to people with big names.
Yep.
So like, that the situation is just that.
Nope. Yep. John Lopez, Reggie Atatula.
Well, as a young broadcaster, I would like to rip. No,
yeah. Yeah, go at
You're
it.
You're gonna rail against the jockocracy.
Go at him.
For the
That's
next
right. Get
hours.
Him, Reggie. Yeah. Get him.
They're they're expanding their way out of this though.
Yeah.
From the analyst to now, it's the athlete doing all of the other things that previously went to the broadcaster guys.
That is true.
No, but one of the things that I do find interesting, and there was one of the things that I thought Tom Brady would be really good at, is just And Seth, you've been, you know, great at this. Clint's been great at this. It's one of the reasons that we're really happy to have both of you guys on the station. It's awesome. Is that, you know, some of the athletes will get into these media spaces and they take it like, this is my new career and I'm going to put that same level of work ethic that I did in my playing career into my work. And you could tell that not all the athletes do that. And no. I imagine that that's also a point of frustration for other folks where they're like, oh, you are simply coaching.
You're just showing up
of,
and turning the microphone
right,
on.
And you believe that this is going to work that way. You know?
That's true. Yeah, I could see that when people are just phoning it in and just giving such – like if Magic Johnson's Twitter account were actually him talking on an NBA broadcast – you'd be like, oh, what the hell is going on here? I mean, come on. There's kind of a spectrum, I guess. I get that. That makes sense.
I like that. How you doing, John?
I'm good. I just to weigh in on that, because my thought has always been, it depends on what lane you want to pick. You know, the professional broadcasters are more of the research and analytics and doing that, whereas the athletes, their experience in sports is their experience.
Is a human
experience. That leads to what they do. Yep. So they pick that lane. There's nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all.
I've got a PhD in BS.
Yes.
That's what I got.
Damn right.
Spent many years honing it.
Absolutely. Yes.
Welcome to the club.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
I might have like a bachelor's degree in BS. I don't think I can compare.
You guys have a great question of the day today.
Well, thank you.
In light of, I
want your answer.
Okay, well, tell the people the genesis of it and what it is for the day here.
Well, it's Duval?
Duval? Duval? Question mark?
Question mark?
Yeah.
So the question of the day is, what's your most humiliating public moment?
Okay.
And this is such a tough question because, look.
Speaking, obviously, would be the main gist of it.
We're all human beings. Like, you try and insulate yourself from constantly putting out your most. So, like. I think in my mind, I've been doing the calculus of how embarrassing is embarrassing enough to fulfill what we're trying to do.
No, we want the best. Okay.
Without
we
also
want the best.
Putting out like the dirtiest of laundry.
Okay.
And make yourself
now, is this the most humiliating moment, or does it have to be like a behind the microphone?
Behind
moment?
The microphone behind is the microphone. Gist
okay.
of it.
I've got one that pops into my head. So back when I was in, before I got into radio, when I was vice president of sales for the company that I worked for, at our annual meeting, we had to get up and present, you know, kind of the outlook for the, we had to recognize all the achievers and give our presentation on the upcoming year, which became my last year as the VP of sales. Well, the company got bought. I got fired because the company got bought. I didn't get fired for this particular meeting, although I would have fired myself. Yeah. Well, the night before, like always happens at the annual meetings, there was a big party the night before, man.
The
meeting was taking place at the nice hotel in downtown Chicago, the Four Seasons. Mm-hmm. That we all had hotel rooms there. You know, it wasn't one. And we flew everybody from the company in, and we had a big presentation room, big meeting room and whatnot. And we had a big party the night before. And boy, did I get hammered at that party. And so I woke up the next day. I was really hungover for this presentation. But my mouth was so dry from being hungover that my enunciation was affected by it. And I didn't have any water up on the stage. So I'm talking like I am talking in a manner with that people are like, is there something
like
wrong with him?
Speech impediment.
Yes. Yeah. Like there's something wrong with him, to the point that there reached a point in the presentation where multiple people walked up with huge glasses of water and put it on the dais right there for me.
Drink this,
that
please.
That would be, I'll tell you what, that would be pretty insulting if you did indeed have a speech impediment.
Right. Yeah. Well, my speech impediment, I had one the night before, but that was because I was stuttering from alcohol.
Seth, you've spoken a lot, whether as a player or as a broadcaster. What's your most humiliating public speaking moment?
Oh, I remember going to...
This is going to be good.
This was for a Special Olympics event I was a player. And somebody had asked me, don't worry. No. It's not going to be it's not going to be bad. It's the person who asked me to do the speaking engagement framed it as basically get up and make a comment or two, and that's it. I got there, and they had expected me to speak for a half hour.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
And I had done zero prep. I had like a nice little couple sentences I was going to say. And I tell you, I might have given him 15 minutes, and I don't remember 13 and a half of the minutes. And I just remember – I remember getting very tepid applause at the end of it. I was devastated ever since then. It was awful. It was awful.
Okay, I remember one that was fairly recent.
This is like when I was a young player in the NFL. Like now, I'd be able to ham my way through that pretty easily. I was not ready for that. Yeah,
that's a good one. I actually have one that's related to the station. Remember the toast or roast of John McClain?
Yeah,
I was emceeing that,
mm-hmm.
and I was killing it. I was doing really, really well till we got to the very end, and there was a certain speaker who was supposed to be there at a certain time,
yep.
and was very late getting there. I'm not going to say who it was.
But he saves you money.
He was late, and John still hadn't spoken yet, and I had no... I'm up on stage. I have no action plan for one of these speakers being late.
Criminals off the street and in jail.
I'm just up there like, okay. I'm thanking sponsors multiple times.
That's right. I remember that. Because I went to the edge of the stage thinking I could just go up there and riff with you.
Dude,
That's the same night that I spoke when Rich Lord couldn't speak, and I did my entire set off the cuff.
Yeah. Well, and when you're in that position, you're like, okay, well, I have plenty of funny stories I can tell right now, but I don't know if this audience has the appetite for these stories. Like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do here. And so it was probably three or four or five minutes that felt like 30 minutes up there. And eventually, McClain, we just waved him up on the stage and said, all right, you're supposed to be the grand finale, but come up here and you can be the warm-up act for your last presenter, you know? And so that was uncomfortable. That was awkward.
It was.
Not as awkward as having a hangover-induced speech impediment in front of very large shareholders of our company back in the
day. The stakes really make it tough.
Like I wasn't even getting paid for the emceeing gig. Like this, my job was on the line.
That's right.
I guess the presentation was okay. It just sounded really, really funny with my foam mouth.
How many of these people did you know ahead of time?
In that room?
Yeah.
All of them.
Okay, because I was like, maybe this is one of those things where this is like a corporate...
Wait, which one are you talking about? The speech one? Or
the speech impediment.
Yeah, I knew everybody.
Okay, because I wonder if it works a little bit better if they don't really know you. You're just like in another arm of the company, and they're like, maybe that's just the way he talks.
That's the way he talks. No, they all knew I needed water, yeah.
Or they would have congratulated you on your bravery.
Yeah.
You know.
You're doing so well.
That would be the worst, is if you did so poorly that people congratulate you for your bravery.
Yeah. I feel like the worst version of that is, you're so strong.
Yeah. Bless his heart. They were all saying bless his heart, I promise you. All right, Seth, antibodies to you, my friend.
That's what everybody was saying to Brandy at our anniversary party. So got to reevaluate that now. Yeah, antibodies to you.
Okay. I thought that's what you meant they were saying. That would have been weird. All right, Payne and Pendergast, we are done.